fourth and final hour of the program underway. Chris Thomas tonight. Appreciate everybody who's participated in our Falcons Town Hall at 404-726-0929 and on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. But we got to pivot just for a minute and talk some college football because there is a ton going on in the world of college ball. The latest rankings are out, Lane Kiffin saga, Georgia in the mix. And then as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in our buddy Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports. Joe, Jared Curtis sends shockwaves through the college football world. How surprised were you that he decided to flip his commitment to Vanderbilt?
I mean, pretty surprised. I think that anybody who's been tracking his commitment in these recruiting classes, just from when he committed to Georgia, it seemed like that would make the most sense. I understand why he did it. He's from Tennessee. It's regional. It's a commitment to building somewhere where he's from. But the one thought that I had is this that I've kind of found interesting. And Georgia hasn't been impacted by this because they've done such a good job of identifying guys like Gunnar Stockton and hopefully Ryan Puglisi is the next guy who kind of fits this. It keeps happening where they're losing these top quarterback recruits. It happened with Dylan Raiola, and you know, now here we are again with Jared Curtis. I don't think that Georgia is going to be too hurt by this. I feel like that they're going to be able to bounce back and to be able to find that next quarterback recruit that they'll steal away from somebody, a mid to high level four star. But this is a bit of an aberration. I don't think that we're going to see something like this happen on a recurring basis, but it's just kind of funny that this is the way things have turned out.
Now, I've been asking everybody who I've been talking to today about this. Do you think that he can keep the overwhelming success going at Vanderbilt? That's just not a program, Joe, that does it at a consistent basis.
I think that he can because we got to look at what's been the driver. I know that Diego Pavia gave a lot of energy to this team, and he's kept them alive in a lot of games. There has been gradual improvements for this Vanderbilt squad year over year. I think that what success looks like for Jared Curtis and Vanderbilt in the future is different, though. I don't think it's a 10-2 season. I don't think it's consistent wins over Tennessee. I think it's probably a little more in the 8-4, 9-3 range, and they're able to sustain being well above average. I don't think that they're going to end up being in that pocket of being one of the up-and-coming SEC programs because it's just too hard to live in that world when you're not bringing in five stars at other positions. But I think that what's the most intriguing part about this and a layer that is kind of clear, this should be an early opportunity for Curtis to get on the field. We've seen a lot of true freshmen across the sport get chances to jump in. And if there's a quarterback recruit who can do it, it's him. I think that he'll be able to jump out there and potentially have an impact like a DJ Lagwe or a Dylan Raiola did when they played early on in their first seasons.
All right. So when it comes to this version of the Georgia squad, do you think they finally solved the bugaboo in Alabama this weekend?
Yes, I absolutely do. I quite frankly, we've got two teams that are on completely different trajectories. We've got this Georgia squad that's gradually improved and gotten better every single week. They have figured out their defensive identity where they've had 9 sacks in the month of November. I think that even in instances where Gunnar Stockton hasn't played great and opposing teams have aggressively gone after him, you've seen the run game rally around him and be able to support him, which is the biggest separation point from last year to this year. One would argue that that was Carson Beck back there last season against Georgia Tech. They probably would have lost that game based on how imbalanced their offense was. The one thing that does get a little odd here, and as much as Alabama has shown flaws where their offensive line has been weak, Ty Simpson has made more mistakes than he generally has had during the month of October, it's been inexplicable the times that Kirby Smart has lost to DeBoer. Everything made sense to lean into and to pick Georgia to win those games. And every time I pick Georgia in those instances, I've been wrong. So that's the only really evidence to put out there for Bama, to make the argument for Bama to win once again. But I think that at the end of the day, Georgia's going to get it done because it's on the biggest stage. And Kirby always finds a way to win in the SEC championship.
Okay, so looking at what happened this week in terms of the standings, we got the new rankings, the newest rankings. Why Texas Tech at number four?
I think it's justified in the circumstance that they have won so defiantly. They've just won so easily, and they've dominated their way through their schedule. They have had an ease with all of their opponents, and their singular loss, when we add the context of the fact that they did not have their starting quarterback, Baron Morton, out, if we remove that from the picture, when they've had Morton for most of this year, they've blown out Big 12 opponents that they've seen. They blew out BYU, who they're about to get a rematch with. They blew out Utah, who is also ranked. They've blown out all of the ranked or hovering ranked Big 12 teams this season. The one thing I will say is I am a bit stunned that Texas A&M dropped as far as they did with how well that they've looked this year, and they dropped behind Texas Tech, because one would argue it's a less damaging loss to have lost to Texas, who looked as good as they did in the game, and they themselves are a solid, impressive team. But I think that important added context of when their loss happened and when they're at full strength, and they're currently at full strength, Texas Tech has been the more impressive squad.
All right, so before we spend the obligatory couple of minutes on Lane Kiffin, what do you make of the PSU search now that Kalani Sitake has taken his name out of consideration and is going to remain at BYU?
Yeah, it's an absolute mess. A lot of talking that I've had with people over this, trying to figure out like what's going on. I thought that maybe potentially there are rumors of Lincoln Riley being in the mix, but I don't think that that's going to really happen. They've swung and missed and thought that they had power in battles that just make absolutely no sense. They go after Mike Elko, and they thought that they could outspend and out-leverage Texas A&M of all programs. And I thought that it didn't make any sense for them to go after Sitake because he's a West Coast guy, a former BYU player, and we know that there is a very rich alumni base from BYU. And we're not talking about, like, you know, some millionaires here and there. There's a bunch of billionaires that are really committed to the football and basketball programs, and they stepped up in a very big way to keep Sitake. I think that their next best available options, one is very simple, of just going with Terry Smith and promoting him for a year and kind of Zach Arnetting this thing and saying, hey, we'll give you a shot because he finished the year decently, but if this doesn't go well, we're going to have to move on. We're going to give you one season. We'll figure this out. If that's not the route that they want to go and punt until next year to be the premier job during the next cycle's openings, I still think Brian Daboll's a great coach. Even though he didn't work in the NFL, I think that his skill set, his offensive prowess would work well at a program like Penn State and would work well in the NFL. I also think that someone like Dan Mullen absolutely has to be on the table. And I don't know if he decides to leave UNLV, but he has been a proven winner in the SEC at the highest level. And the last possible option that we can turn to is really going down the list. If we like look at somebody like Willie Fritz at Houston, who's been really good at Tulane and has already turned Houston into a ranked team. I don't know where they're going to turn, but they have completely mishandled this operation, and they've really, really proven that they're not as big of a dog in this fight as they thought they were.
Dare they? And I know the answer, but it's just piquing my interest. Brian Kelly?
No. No, I mean, after the way that things ended with LSU, I think that Penn State fans need to have enough pride to not go after Brian Kelly. That would be quite embarrassing if that's who they went with. Brian Kelly was a great coach at one point. I think that he has completely mailed it in. I think that he has regressed. I think that his intentionality, his intensity, his focus have completely regressed, not to mention all the stories of him being just generally not a very likable person. I don't know why you would want to bring that into the mix at Penn State. I think that you should aspire to look elsewhere.
One more floater for you. Same last name, guy who just was relieved of his duties, has had major success in college. What about Chip Kelly?
Oh, man. I think that's even more of a downgrade than than going with Brian Kelly. I think he's a brilliant offensive mind, but he's got to go back to being an OC somewhere. I don't think that he has got what it takes to be a head coach. And I think that the what came out about how he was managing things with the Raiders is kind of disturbing that things transpired the way that they did. So, no, I think that, I mean, Chip Kelly's probably done with his coaching career unless he takes a coordinator gig.
Okay, so just from a crystal ball perspective, big picture here, LSU is vindicated within the next two or three seasons of going the extra mile to finally put an end to this Lane Kiffin saga.
I think that they will be vindicated in the next 2 to 3 years. I think that they will capably be competing for national championships in 3 years. I don't know if they win a national title, but I think that they're going to be a top four team within that time span. I think that Lane Kiffin has proven that he is a great coach. I think that and John Feltz did a great job of covering this for CBS Sports, and I was reading that this morning, his piece kind of outlined how him being held back from other opportunities despite putting his name in some of these big jobs, nobody wanted to put up with the antics. But I think that it's been proven that he has been so successful that he's made himself worthy of bypassing that. I also think that his identity is a perfect fit for LSU. I think that he relishes in being a villain. I think LSU fans relish in being villains as well, and I think they're hyped up about rallying around it. But where we see that Kiffin now has an opportunity to take a step forward is that he was succeeding with a below-average recruiting base. He was best recruiting class that he had was 17th. It's hard to recruit in the state of Mississippi. It's hard to keep those kids committed in the state of Mississippi. It is easy to recruit at LSU. Brian Kelly, who was putting in the bare minimum, was recruiting well at LSU. Heck, after he was fired, most of the top recruits in the state stayed committed to LSU because they want to be a part of the brand. I think that once he gets that crop of guys that he can pull from of five stars and high four stars, and then also to be able to dominate in the portal the way that he did, like he was at Ole Miss, the ceiling is incredibly high. I was really low on the BK hire. I'm all in on the LK hire here. I think that he has what it takes to become one of the greatest coaches in the history of the sport because this is the right alignment between a team, their vision, and a head coach who has grand aspirations.
Okay, so how much of the last couple of weeks has to do with the fact that it was Lane Kiffin specifically? Like, if this fanfare was about Marcus Freeman choosing about, just for an example, Florida and LSU, it wouldn't have been nearly the sensation that it was, right?
No, I think a lot of it has to do with Kiffin. I mean, like for Freeman's one of the quietest people that you're gonna see in a situation like this. It really does feel like Kiffin did mismanage a good portion of this. And I think as much as I'm bullish on Kiffin, I do think that he had a lot of missteps in how this was handled. I think he needed to have been a lot more direct with LSU. I think that he thought, which I don't fault him for wanting to coach his team, by the way, because I think that you've spent all this time and you've put all this energy into getting a team this far. You might as well let him see the things, or you should expect him to want to see it through. But I think that he was trying to be coy about it and to mislead Ole Miss to see how far he could take this thing in order to be able to coach during the playoff to not cause any distractions, and it blew up in his face. I think that he has always been somebody who's relished in drama. So the fact that this played out the way that it did is not shocking. He has always been this type of guy. I know that he tried to play out in that documentary that, you know, he's a changed person, he's a changed man. I don't think that's true. I think that this is just more par for the course, and if anything, it's one of the worst transitions that he's had, which is something to be said about how things went down in Tennessee and USC.
All right, before I let you go, if you're the Saints or the Jets, are you targeting Fernando Mendoza, Dante Moore, or Ty Simpson as your QB1?
I'm going after Mendoza first. I have been so impressed by Mendoza. And first of all, actually, before I continue further, I think that Dante Moore is probably going to go back to school. It just seems like there's a lot of signs that are pointing in that direction that he does return to school, and it might be best for him. Ty Simpson is a great player, but I think he's shown a little bit of inconsistency, and he's got only one season as a starter. I think he could be a great NFL player, but it's hard to find a history of guys who have succeeded with limited numbers of starts under their belt like Ty Simpson. Mendoza, for me, though, that kid has found ways to elevate every single team that he's played for. Got a great arm. He has underrated athletic skills. And I think he has a very rare view of how the sport works. I think that he's just got this really detail-oriented perspective of the game, listening to him talk, and it's visible in the film, seeing how it translates. He sees the field incredibly well. I think he has the potential to be Drake May-ish and step in, and by year two, he has transformed and completely elevated a franchise. There's a lot of similar tools that they have. I also think he also reminds me quite a bit of Matt Ryan. I think that Fernando Mendoza is going to be a slam dunk pick, and he's going to be such an amazing player in the NFL.
Joe, great stuff. We'll check you out. A to Z Sports. Appreciate you as always. We'll chat soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is our good buddy there, Joe DeLeon. Interesting. He thinks Dante Moore is going back to school. So he's going to compete with Arch Manning and the like to try to come out in the draft next year? Interesting. All right, let's get back to the Falcons conversation. You want the latest from Flowery Branch? I got you. Joe Patrick stops by next on Chris Thomas Tonight. Yeah, this is interesting. This one has a little bit more of a kick to it than the original soundtrack. Love it. 404-726-0929. This is the new theme of the Falcons Town Hall for the rest of the night. Join the morning shift every Friday for the Tailgate at Home presented by Publix. And you can also join me on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game after each and every Falcons game for the Falcons Flyover. It's your chance to call in and react after every game. It's brought to you by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. That's the Falcons Flyover immediately following every Falcons game this season on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm sure Joe would be interested to know that Amy Grant is going to be at the Fox Theater, I think, December the 11th.
Is that right?
Yeah, singing holiday classics, and maybe even she'll even sing a little Baby Baby for us there, Joe.
I think Joe Patrick on
the way. Hop me up. Let's go.
And
how
Joe.
About that? That was, I'm glad you called that out, Chris. That version had like a little bit more pizzazz somehow. It's like the. I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
the
new
mommy of that song.
It's like they put a little hot sauce on it or something. It just had a little bit more of a kick to it. Joe Patrick with us on the wait4.com hotline. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on football wherever you get your podcast. Joe, the Falcons lost to the Jets. That is a thing that happened on Sunday. Did you witness from this team that once again allowed a team to come back into the game, then eventually take the lead, walk off the Falcons on a 56-yard field goal, and get us to the point where we are now?
Yes, I mean, it's so frustrating because it feels like in some respects, especially offensively with what Bijan Robinson was able to give you, you know, you play that, that's the kind of performance you needed and the kind of game you needed to walk out of there with a win. But, you know, once again, it's just the fact that this team gives itself no room for error and they commit far too many errors. And that was obviously evident on special teams. Once again, you know, obviously Jamal Agnew's fumble inside his 5-yard line is huge. Like that's a game swinging play that causes you, you know, it's a 7-point difference there, but it's the continual lack of coverage from this team that is really, really concerning on that special teams unit. And that's why they just, you know, they just give up points. It feels like almost every single week. And then the other thing that was frustrating in this one, Chris, was, you know, defensively, just allowing Tyrod Taylor to get these scrambling yardage and just kind of giving up some of that easy yards where it didn't feel like the Jets really had much to threaten you with on the offensive side of the football. And you get beat by A.D. Mitchell on, you know, kind of a fluky-ish kind of play because, you know, of a defender falling down there. But just overall, obviously, just a really, really frustrating day and kind of epitomizes a bit of what this Falcons season has been so far.
I thought you had a very interesting back and forth with head coach Raheem Morris the other day about making potential changes to the special teams. What did you ask the coach, and then how did he respond?
Yeah, you know, I asked Raheem Morris the exact question that friends, family were texting me, you know, during that game, watching that frustrating special teams performance and literally saying, like, you know, why are we continuing with a special teams coach? That's special teams coordinator
Marquise Williams, while the team fired Ike Hilliard, its wide receivers coach, in week three. And this is a wide receivers unit that really emerged, I thought, last year under Ike Hilliard, where Drake London has a big year, fourth in the NFL in receiving yards. Darnell Mooney almost has 1,000 yards. Ray McCloud has 600 yards, over 600 yards. And then early in the season, in week three, you make that firing. So what is the difference between what's happening on the special teams unit and what was going on there in the wide receiver room? And Raheem Morris said it was down to communication that was happening, or a lack thereof, I guess, poor communication, whatever that kind of means. He kind of left it vague, but just like he said, the way things were being communicated in that room were affecting performance, and that's why he he named performance as the reason why he fired Ike Hilliard after week three, after he made that action. So, and he said that the communication's not a problem with Marquise Williams, and kind of alluding to the fact that it's more just players making individual errors. But again, I think that there are obviously players making individual errors, on special teams, whether that's kicking, whether that's a fumble like Jamal Agnew. But again, it's the coverage units that really haven't been good this year or last year. Last year, they were 30th in the NFL in kickoff coverage as well. So, that's the question I asked. But, it was an interesting answer, to say the least.
Yeah, it's just something that, honestly, Joe, I said this on the show a couple of weeks ago. I was surprised there wasn't a move made after the Berlin game because of the way that you let the Colts constantly start on your side of the field, and then to follow it up with this performance just a couple of weeks later. I know that it's something that has been talked about ad nauseum, but Joe, I honestly feel at this point, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, that the reason that there hasn't been sweeping changes at this point is simply because there's really nobody that could even finish out the season should Raheem Morris be relieved of his duties. 22 games under 500 now as a head coach, just clearly not working out here in Atlanta. But Joe, I mean, it's not Zach Robinson. It's not TJ Yates. It's clearly not Marquise Williams or Jeff Ulbrich. We saw what happened as a disaster as the interim for the Jets last year. So I think sort of by default, he gets to finish out the season.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that, just like organizationally, the decision is like, is a move going to help, and help can happen in many different ways, whether that's, helping the players be better players and have better performances, or help you, with your image, basically, and what you want to project to the fan base in terms of, meritocratic standards or whatever that is. But I think ultimately right now, the decision is that the team will not be better served by other people being in charge with still a decent chunk of the season left to go. And that's generally the reason why I think, certain owners, and Arthur Blank has typically been one that does not fire in season. And I think it's kind of just a philosophy of kind of what you believe is best. And I think that there is an argument to say that, it doesn't really make sense to kind of chop and change things at this point. But again, clearly it's like, it's not like you just have some amazing special teams coach that you have that you can go to. It's not quite that simple. And so that's basically, the determination that the organization is making at this point. And I think that that's kind of how Raheem Morris will be until they ever want to make that move to potentially end his tenure.
What's the latest on Drake London, and what do you make of the fact that this injury's taken a little bit of time now?
Yeah, it's an interesting one that he's got a PCL sprain, and these sprains can be really kind of finicky, and I think it kind of has to do with, just like the severity of the sprain and whatnot. I'm not a doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so I got that one in. But, he's looking better. He was out last week, which was the first game that he missed. Raheem Morris said he's now day-to-day, which is an improvement from what he was last week, which was week-to-week. I still think it's very much up in the air at this point. In fact, if you had to push me one way or the other, I'd probably say it's more likely that he misses this game. Again, with nothing on the line, you don't really want to risk something at this point. But it looks like he will be able to return relatively soon to this team.
With less than nothing backing up Kyle Pitts and Darnell Mooney at this point, and I know Kyle Pitts had a good game, but those two, for the most part, have been major disappointments this year. Why make Kadarius Hodge and Casey Washington inactive? I just don't understand.
Yeah, you know, I think it sounds like for different reasons, Raheem Morris did note that, like, Kadarryl Hodge was a healthy scratch because he said there were some things that he didn't do right last week, and basically that being the reason for him kind of not earning his way into the game day roster. But, I mean, you know, it's hard for fans to accept that when they don't see practice or games or, you know, the tape, whatever it might be that caused the team to make the decision. And they know that he's a Pro Bowl special teamer. And so it's hard to kind of really justify that. You know, and they also saw him make like a big catch last year when Kirk Cousins passed to him in that overtime game against the Bucks and kind of got some recognition as a receiver from that. So, you know, ultimately these coaches are doing what they think is going to, you know, give them the best opportunity. And then the Casey Washington one is concerning. You know, that one's just concerning about
are
kind
you
of,
tired of
you wonder where
candy?
His standing
We've
is and whether, you know, I'm sure, yeah, next year he will be absolutely fighting for you know, for a job. And at this point, it's like you wonder if you would even earn that spot over some of the guys that, you know, presumably beat or, you know, ostensibly beat him out in training camp and the likes of guys like Dylan Drummond, Tompkins. So, you know, you've got some other options there you can go to, but it's not a good group. You know, you're totally right, Chris, that it's like this, it's really killing this team right now. They just don't have really dynamic pass catchers, especially for a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who kind of needs those playmakers on the outside to really be dangerous, like he had in Minnesota.
Speaking of Kirk Cousins, as we're talking with Joe Patrick, make sure you check out Joe Patrick on Football wherever you get your podcasts. Do you foresee him sort of steadily coming along the rest of the way? That's kind of how it feels like to me. I don't think he's ever going to reach the heights that he did last season where he was breaking records, but it seems like the more like he kind of knocks the rust off, it seems like he's still, I guess, competent would be the word I would use.
I'm sorry, I missed the name. Who were you talking about?
Kirk Cousins.
Oh, Kirk. Yeah. I mean, like, I think he's playing fine. You know, like he, again, he wasn't the cause. I think you would have thought if the Falcons were to lose to the Jets, Kirk Cousins was probably going to be a big reason why. He really wasn't. Like, he played well and good enough. And I think that, like, the team can sustain with him. Honestly, he's, like, the least of my concerns I would have for this team right now. In fact, I think that if anybody's going to kind of keep heads a little, like, level and hopefully the performances, like, continue to be professional, like, I guess you could debate last Sunday. But, you know, I still thought the guys played hard. And I think having him at quarterback and kind of leading the way, especially, you know, with the game plans and such, I think it'll actually be a decent leader for this team down the end of the season.
Before I let you go, obviously we know you're on the Atlanta United trail as well. What did you make of the announcement about Garth Lagerwey?
Yeah, just I you know, love Garth. He's like a true gentleman, and hope he's going to do well. But he's stepped away, or he's no longer with Atlanta United as he you know, battles cancer. So yeah, just all thoughts with him. And you know, I know that, you know, he's no one will fight harder than he will. So yeah, hope all of the best for Garth.
What does it mean for the franchise?
You know, they're going to start a search which has already begun, and that new president, Garth's successor, will actually oversee both Atlanta United and the newly announced NWSL team that's set to start in 2028. So a bit of an expanded role, and probably not as, like, keenly focused on, like, transfers and things as Garth Lagerwey may have been in his role. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of candidates pop up in that respect. I would imagine it's not going to be some, like, former MLS GM. It will probably be somebody more kind of business related, I would think, and obviously having a connection to women's sports. But yeah, that will be the ongoing search. No real timeline for that. I would expect that there's not really a rush. Like, the people in charge of soccer are already in place, and so this could take a while. I just don't know.
All right, Joe, appreciate it as always. We'll chat next week. Hopefully they can do the unthinkable and take on the Seattle squad and beat them at the Bends. We'll see.
And we got to get that Amy Grant song, one back next week.
Yeah, we'll get the remix going. We'll let dealer's choice for Orin if he wants to play the OG or the remix. Thanks, Joe.
All right, thanks, Chris.
All right, that is Joe Patrick there to wrap up shop. This is the upbeat. If you missed it, this is the upbeat version. We discovered this one in the computer files today. It was tucked away somewhere. We had never heard it before, and the original one's just a little more mellow, a little smoother. This one's got a little bit of a beach party vibe to it. I don't hate it, that's for sure. All right, when we get back to wrap up shop, some final Falcons thoughts. Plus, I saw a movie this weekend, and we'll break it down with Oren, that gave me hope for franchises that are trying to reboot themselves. And Lord knows we don't have enough of those floating around these days. We'll do all that and more to wrap up shop on an Atlanta Falcons Town Hall Tuesday. Chris Thomas tonight.